Okay, we'll call the Board of Tarrant County 01 District Board of Managers meeting for June 22nd. For the Section 2 Agenda Announcements. All right, Board of Managers update, item 3.
You should have board frost bank signature cards, which every board member needs to sign if we have chairs, so members, we need to update that.
Okay.
After the board meeting, that will.
Okay. Item B.
We had the board sign conflict of interest affidavits back in January. They were not notarized in a timely manner, so we have to do that.
Okay. You want to do that today also?
Yes, Renee will do.
All right. So we'll move on to item 4, consent agenda. Have a motion to approve minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Minutes are approved. So we've got item 5, assistance program, City of Euless.
Good morning. I have a request from the City of Euless, from NECO Shared Trunk System. They are requesting $28,116.32 for the SUA fees associated with being connected to the corporate system. And this does fall in line with the interoperability assistance program allowable to exist.
Does the board have any questions for Travis?
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, I'm City Attorney.
So noted, thank you. Any questions for Travis?
Move approval.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye, motion carries. Purchases over $25,000. Yeah, right, over $25,000.
So we had our quarterly HVAC review, I want to say it was March. And at that time, Environmatics advised us of our 8 air conditioning systems, or 9, at least 6 of them were cracked. The system is 10 years old, we think from that with the deal, it is beyond its normal life. They told us for about $7,000, they could patch them, and they could potentially get us through the summer, or we would, if the patch wouldn't work. So I asked them for a quote of how much it would cost to replace the ones, the systems that are broken. We actually did not have this in the budget, but we do have enough funding in the interoperability budget to cover that. The quote we have right now is $62,000. We're still looking to verify DIR contracts and et cetera. But just 2 weeks ago, we walked into this building and the unit down the far end had totally seized up. It was very warm. So we're actually asking the board to approve us to move forward. We will hopefully bring you guys a final amount, but we don't want the system to crack before the next board meeting. And we're stuck doing a lot of patchwork. We'd rather go ahead and just replace the units that would be replaced. It's just too warm here to allow something like that to happen.
Any questions from the board? So it's the R22 factor, I guess. New refrigerant systems are coming into play also. Patching these things would not be a long-term solution. Sorry. Go ahead, Rick.
I said move approve.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye, motion carries.
Thank you.
Move to presentations.
Texas 911 update. We naturally were slightly delayed with COVID-19. Hopefully, come Friday, Comtech's engineers were very backed up. We'll begin to look at our account. We still, our go-live date was pushed out to August 1st. We're still hoping to meet that timeline. We've got the paperwork submitted that we needed for each PSA. We've got our training done for the most part. We're just waiting for the live. We've been testing the system in our lab. We're waiting for the live one to be turned up to verify that it matches the training documentation that we put together.
So all the PSAs are going through training are made aware?
We had to fill out a document for each PSA as far as readings and cues and how many calls they want to hit at one time. And how the agents will be logging in and things like that. So that's been completed and sent over to Comtech.
Just waiting on the training until they do more testing, and then they'll send out the training, which I guess we're still shooting for that to be online. Are we still thinking that's going to be easy to accomplish?
Yeah, so we'll send you the hard documents as well, but then we'll go ahead and get you guys online so that everybody can have a chance to do the training, and it shouldn't be more than 20 minutes or so.
Any discussion from the board? Questions? Okay. Construction update?
I think you can smell that we're moving along. So all the walls are up, and the wall sand is sanded, and the painting now, they'll start dropping the frame through the ceiling tiles. So it's moving along. We had a slight delay with the AV system, and well, COVID naturally, but as we moved along, we had some AV questions, some changes, some. Once they took the walls down, there were some surprises that we had to adjust to. But we're still looking around mid-July to be pretty close to that. So.
Okay. Any questions about the update? We'll move on.
Breakfast at TC event. Good afternoon, first of all. Sorry about that. The event has been changed from July 17th to August the 27th, which is a Thursday. The event's time is still from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Topgolf. The main thing I want to update you guys on is COVID-19 measures that's being taken place. They are required, the staffers at Topgolf are required to 48 start work, have their temperature to be checked. They're also required to wear masks. They will be serving food for each personnel that comes in. And then the thing is, they're going to have it set up as a buffet style. There's going to be a partition between the server and the servee. Along with that, they'll also have bays. In the bays, there's going to be dividers. And they'll also have social distancing markers along all the common areas. So make sure that we stay in line with the social distancing. I think I covered everything. Any questions?
We will be emailing you guys a link to sign up this afternoon.
In the weekly update last week, uh-huh. The announcement said it was going to be for telecommunicators only.
So, no, the weekly brief is more so for the managers per se. So, anybody, you guys can come, you can bring up to one guest. So, that person
should come. So, they can bring the spouse?
Yes.
Okay.
Anybody else? All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Executive Director's report.
Really, I don't have a report. I want to hop into the budget, but I don't know if Bill needs to head out before we go into the budget, because that's going to take a while.
Sure.
Doesn't mind just going taking care of
it. So we'll jump to briefings.
Sure. Thanks. I really don't have that much to report since I briefed you 3 weeks ago. They were relaxing restrictions at the Capitol, but then some DPS troopers tested positive for COVID-19, so back into a complete lockdown. Leadership is really trying to figure out how they're going, what the session is going to look like starting in January, assuming we don't have any major breakthroughs between now and then. You know, in the Senate, even just conducting business on the floor, the Senate, they can spread out far enough, but the House, you've got 150 members, and they're looking at everything from putting up plastic partitions, moving members into the gallery and preventing the public from getting in there. So it's going to be very interesting and uncharted territory, how they handle the business on the floor, how they conduct public hearings. I mean, right now, all interim hearings have been postponed indefinitely. So it's just something we're just going to have to figure out a way to work around and get our point across whenever we need to get it across to the right members. July 14th, special elections coming up. Special election and then primary runoff elections. Early voting starts June 29th for that. I'm starting to see more campaigning going on, at least down in Austin, seeing TV commercials and things like that. I'm sure it's going to be like that everywhere. And then finally, I've got a call this afternoon to discuss with other Alliance lobbyists and members on what the Alliance is trying to do for their reliability funding legislation. I briefed you about it last time. But since that time, there have been other developments happening with some of the members who, Greater Harris County, for instance, is having a hard time asking their legislators to vote for an increase in funding, such a dramatic increase in funding. So the Alliance has not necessarily gone back to square one, but they're trying to come up with something that all members can buy in on. But I don't have any language in front of you. I'm almost hesitant to even bring it up right now. It's so early, but I just want you to be aware of it.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
You're probably free if you want to escape the rest of this.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Power, if you need anything.
Sure. Okay, we're back to budget.
All right. So, I mean, really the ball is in you guys' court to discuss. I put together a couple examples. In particular, Rick and I have been going back and forth in emails looking at the impact of raising business fees or not, as well as residential fees or not. And one thing that on this document that you have here has the blue box and saw it's residence, business, AT&T, etc. As I mentioned last week, and we've actually discussed for a few times since last year, is that because of voice over IP is legislated in such a way that the carriers can either pay 50 cents matching the wireless, or if they designate the lines to be residential or business, they pay what the residential or business amounts are. So an example that I have here is AT&T under other lines. That's their voice over IP business lines. And so where we could be making or earning 50 cent per business line, we're only earning 46 cent because that is what our business line fees are. So just in that one carrier with that one business model, we're losing $2,900 per month, which adds up to a decent amount per year. The same thing goes with the residential. AT&T, even though it's a void line, AT&T is only charging the 50 to 20 cent residential fee. When we do the math of a lot of what is actually voice over IP, we're losing 30 cent per line by having our fee so low. So that's the one example that we wanted to kind of put in perspective how we're hurting ourselves. Even with the lines that we already know exist and we could be collecting fees for. So what I did was a couple examples of either keeping the residential fee at 20 cent, raising business lines to a dollar, PBX to $2. Then two examples of raising residential to 50 cent, keeping business a dollar, and PBX $2. And what that amount would equal to for us.
But really, raising residential is not really going to be what increases our funding, because those are becoming fewer and farther between.
They are, but it's still a grab of money that we're
right.
not getting.
But opposed to if you have the choice between residential or business, or adjusting some of those business fees.
On the voice over IP lines, do they automatically return to the PSAP a street address?
If they register it, they do.
If who registers it?
The user, and a lot of them. Because the account holder has the ability to put whatever address they want in the voice over IP accounts.
See, that's what I thought. The state statute says that to be qualified as a landline, a certain supplier shall furnish for each call the telephone number of the subscriber and the address associated with the number. So to me, anything that the user has to register for, is a VOIP line 50 cents. There's no way that they can claim those as landlines if they don't do landline functionality. Just my opinion. But the logic is solid.
So are you saying, help me out here, that the VOIP should be, a residential is basically a VOIP?
No, I'm saying residential, when this was written, residential was covered. And my grandma, when she picked up the phone and called, an address was automatically delivered. You don't need GIS, you don't need anything. But with the voice over IP lines, if they cannot do the same thing, provide the same functionality as a wireline, copper line, then it shouldn't be charged a copper line rent. It should be charged a 50 cent rate.
Wayne, do you have an opinion on that?
I'm not looking at it right now, but I think the logic is sound.
Yeah.
I think it's something we ought to maybe focus on. I'm glad to do that. The delivery of the service, though, is over copper or fiber.
Okay, but the key point is, and we've had this discussion before with the previous boards, is there is no technology benefit for a wireline customer in the new next-gen 911 world. A phone call's a phone call's a phone call. That's all you get. You're not going to send a text. You're not going to send your health records. You're not going to send anything. And you don't need GIS to ensure that your first responders are going to the right address. It's kind of a low-cost, low-tech, low-expense item.
So are you talking about houses that were copper and they only had a landline and now they're on VoIP? They should be paying 46, not 20.
No, they should be paying 50 cents.
50 cents. 50 cents on.
Because that's the rate that we set. Is 50 cents.
So you're talking about the fact that copper's not in the house is the deciding factor.
Copper's irrelevant. To me, the deciding factor is, does the carrier provide the street address?
And it does. And it's up to the resident to update it. That's where the problem comes from.
That's what I get, that's what I'm trying to get back to is, if I have a landline, I don't have to provide an update. That's taken care of by the telephone company. So when I take on a responsibility, then I should pay that higher rate.
And I don't say that your expression is not sound. However, that is not how the legislation is written. So it would require everybody going back to
the. That is how the legislation is written.
Not the VoIP one.
It's, well, the legislation needs to be updated.
I don't disagree with you all.
Whoever was responsible for
that is the legislation that we're bound to.
Did not do us any favors.
I appreciate that, but it is the legislation we are bound to at this time.
Then why don't we set a voice over IP rate each year? Of 50 cents.
It is already set for us. It was set by the districts, the Alliance, and CSEC. That's what the legislation says, is that voice over IP is not your basic phone service. It is 50 cents unless the carrier indicates the line is business or residence, and then they pay the fee of the amount for which the 911 authority assesses. So 20 cents for residential, 40 cents for business, 46 for business.
Even though it's void?
Okay. That the carrier's been given that option. Some carriers, like we know Spectrum, they just do 50 across the board. AT&T actually breaks it down, residential and business, and hence they pay the fee that we've asked for.
So if we were to pursue a higher residential rate, then the points mute. So whether it falls into the VoIP category or it falls into residential and we're able to secure a higher residential rate, then it really doesn't matter how it gets classified.
That is correct.
Can we segment it for just VoIP residential versus copper residential? Is there a way to do that?
Well,
That would be something that the carriers would do.
I'll look at the regulations to see if it will allow us the leeway to do that. This board sets the rates, it's going to charge, but...
Well, I don't know if we'd be setting a rate if we just did an interpretation of the VoIP issue, where we could collect a residential home rate based on the fact that it's being served by VoIP but not by copper. Do we know what the difference is in the district of who has copper, who has VoIP? Do we know that? We're just called residential.
It's called residential. And we're bound by an agreement, so it's, even though the board sets the wire line fees, the VoIP fee agreement we are bound to. The board can't just say, throw that aside, we're going to do what we want to, because we signed into that agreement. Originally, I think it was like 2004, then again like 2009 or 11, something like that. So it's a...
I know we remember the board ever seeing that document. Which again gets back to the... I know you weren't here then, but that doesn't mean that because we didn't see it then, we shouldn't see it now, and we shouldn't not provide our input.
And that's, again, that's something that we can take up with the Alliance and CSEC. I can talk with Bill about, but it's going to require actual large meetings and et cetera. It's not something that we can do overnight.
So, refresh my memory. We set the residential, and that's it?
Residential, business, and trunks.
And trunk lines. Which one's the trunk line on here?
This will be your PBX lines.
Okay. And the last time you actually looked at these rates was
20 years ago.
1987?
We look at them each year.
Well, the last time you adjusted them?
Yes.
So what was 20 cents in 1987 is now worth 9 cents? Adjusting for inflation?
Actually, to answer that question, we'd have to know what the AT&T rate is for a residential line, a business line, and a PBX truck.
But to answer the question, is it just that if you're paying 20 cents, you can see what 20 cents would buy in 1987 as opposed to inflation from 1987 to 2020?
So, Mayor, I think what we have is a quandary, and I think this is the thing we struggle with about raising the rates, and I think this could be another opportunity to take something to the Mayor's Council about this issue, because most of us here are appointed to this board.
Yeah.
And so the adjusting of the rate has to be in consultation with the entities that we serve. And so this is a thing we've had this discussion year after year about.
We don't have a story.
So are you looking for a recommendation from the Mayor's Council?
We need to identify the rate, and we need to test it to see if the Mayor's Council would be on board with raising the rate.
Well, our next meeting isn't until August 1st.
Right.
So if you want to have a presentation or have a story, a narrative, that we can bring to the Mayor's Council, get that on the agenda and have that discussion.
So I think there's two things. One is the PSAP consolidation issue, right. And then the other is the rate issue, which is the two things that drive her crazy anyway, because she doesn't have enough funding for the future. And you know, the other things is what we're spending our money on and why we're spending our money on.
Well, you know, with the consolidation issue, I've talked about that with a couple of members, which is not a validation of the and one of the things we need to change is that we have a chairman that lasts for 2 years as opposed to 1 year, so they can actually have an agenda to move some things forward. Right now, we're there for 5 meetings, and that's it.
Right.
And then there's no one to take the ball and run with it. And so we're going to look to see if we can change that, but I think the next council would be on board for both of those things. But if we have a presentation and a narrative, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think there's data here already. If you look at the binder with the 911 fees, we're in the bottom of the 25 surveyed districts in terms of fees. I mean, everybody else around us has already moved forward, and we have not. I mean, that's an argument in itself. We're behind the times. We cannot keep the... Take this up. We cannot keep up with the growth that's needed for the district, which is in to long-term support the PSAPs in the way that they need to be supported with next-gen efforts if we do not take some type of initiative to raise the fee structure. I mean, it comes, in my mind, it comes to a service delivery issue. There's public expectation that all of these other emergency communications districts have implemented to get there and deliver that service that the public expects, and we're sitting at the bottom of that list. So I think that right there is an argument in itself, or at least a talking point for the mayor's council to consider. The data is already there.
And I don't know if anybody has an answer to this question, but how did we get different rates for 20, 46, 74, and 50? How come it's just not a standard rate per line, no matter what the line is? Why did we get to the point where there's such a gap between types of lines? And is that worth a conversation regarding just making it a standard 40 cents or standard 50 cents or whatever per whatever the line is? Because it's the same services required no matter how that line is used.
Well, one of the things for your business and your trunks, you're talking about a whole lot more lines in paying for the fee. So I may only be paying 46 cents, but technically I've got 35 desks that can dial 911. So that's a very small amount for me as a business have to pay for to cover my whole business on one trunk, whereas an individual household generally has one or two lines.
Understood, but I'm trying to understand how we had got the different amount, different price rates for residential versus business. And
Chief, I can answer that for you. When the district was established, the original board said that the fee would be 2% of the price for that service. So
that's what it was.
So a residential rate was $10 a month, so 2% was 20 cents. A business line, which she's correct, is a shared line, was 1960. Whatever that math is, and then the business line rate is per trunk, and I think that was probably.
So then help me understand why the 2% didn't keep going up as the costs associated with the service went up.
But a lot of the service costs didn't go because of competition moved in a big way. So Spectrum, AT&T, all of the other Verizon, you name it, they drove the cost down from residential and business.
And when competition came in, somebody somewhere got together collectively and made the decision that, okay, instead of tying it to the cost of the service, we'll just make it 20 cents, 40 cents. But the other thing on the 74 cent rate that you have to understand is that's only for the first 100 lines at a premise. So General Dynamics, that may have 10,000 trucks coming into their business, they pay for 100. GM pays for 100. City of Fort Worth, which may have 100 lines, pays the same as GM.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? So, do we want to do a formal just canvassing of ourselves where we stand on a potential rate increase, board members, or does it even matter? I know we have to, for any action to take place, there has to be a vote, but I think for us to take a vote, we have to be in the right position on these issues, and we're not. We find ourselves in this perpetual quandary of where are we? Why are we here? Why can't we do anything about it? We don't. And so I get the forecasting of, you know, we're going to be in trouble in the future. Could we go another year? Could we consolidate? Can we do all these other things and cost-saving methods? But also, our rates are historically ridiculously low as compared to all our peers. It's not necessarily a reason to raise rates if you can get by with it, but now we're getting to the point where we're forecasting deficits because our rates are too low. The other side would be, well, we shouldn't be doing these other things. And so I think there has to be a discussion about these things. And, you know, I find that we don't do that. And I like to push the issue a little further out there and see what the pulse is of the community if we were to raise rates that were comparable to our peer entities. Anybody have a perspective they want to share on that?
Oh, well, I think we're putting the cart before the horse. We need to look at our budget, see where we can get lean. Because we've had low rates for a long time because we've just had pots of money. So we do things that fiscally conservative organizations probably don't do anymore. We're still paying for meals. We don't need to do that. We have, it's observed to me at last year's Mayor's Council meeting that we have a overly lucrative travel budget. We pay for
employee appreciation.
Employee appreciation.
So are you suggesting we cut all these things out of the budget?
I'm saying I would expect staff to give us a balanced budget, and if we don't have a balanced budget, and that balanced budget ought to have a wish list of other things that need to be considered, and then we decide off that wish list which things that we can take to a mayor's council and say, this is why we need to raise our rates. Because we have scrubbed our budget, it's down to the bone, just like yours is, and there are some things that we really would like to do in your organization. One of them being, no, it won't save the district a lot of money, but it would save a lot of our member entities money if we consolidated PSAPs. We've got business cases within our district where cities have saved a ton of money because they consolidated. But that's part of the story that we've been asking for 11 years.
And I appreciate where you're coming from, but the consolidation of PSAPs does not benefit the district's budget, to be honest.
But it gives a good story to tell to the members.
That's true, but right now, my concern, my need, is for the board to help me with the budget for next year. We can work with consolidation. I talked to Chief Davis and provided him a great document to look at when it comes to consolidation, and I will be all for it or whatever. But right now, that does not affect my 2021 budget. So what I asked the board to do, can we go lean? We certainly can. We get rid of the PSAP assistance programs, radio interoperability programs, we are right as rain.
But if I may, I think that what you just said makes a lot of sense. And I think that we need to ask you to do that. And I think what we need to ask you to do is a top-down, bottom-up approach to this. Whereas, if you needed to present a balanced budget, what would that look like? Unfortunately, it may be staff layoffs, it may be cutting of services, correct? But if you say to us, this is the impact that trying to balance my budget is going to cause me, it gives me the opportunity to go back to Mayor Price and say, listen, the state has really impacted local government funding through the last session. Not getting political, but the fact is it's true. Now COVID's come, there's a $37 million deficit that the city's looking at trying to. I spoke about the last meeting, I spoke about the impact that cutting the grant assistance programs would have. That would be something that I would say to the mayor. Doug and I would go as the city's representatives and say, Mayor, and David Cook, what is your direction to us? Yes, she can cut and cut and cut, but these are services they're providing that if they cut out, then I'm going to have a guy to do on my end. So that's going to cause the city, there has to be this discussion, but in order to do it, in order to send me to a gunfight with a gun and not a knife, I need to have what the impact is on this organization and how I can say to them, all right, so here's an option, and that is increasing the fees. They haven't been increased in over 20 years. We're in the bottom third of centers around us. It makes a whole lot of sense. Can we offset some of the impact to your staff and your budget here by increasing fees and have a balance, Mayor? Can you support that?
You agree, Mayor?
Yeah.
So I do think that do think you're onto something here, that we need to have the argument in order to say to the mayor of all of our, you know, and we, Don, can share with the fire chiefs, because you know, the fire chiefs seem to be the conduit to a lot of the mayors for a lot of these discussions. Would you agree on that?
I agree.
Well, I would say this, is that, yeah, you should always tell you what the consequences are of not having an increase. That should always be out there. But the idea is that, well, we can go lean. I get tired of that, because I hear that in my city all the time. We're cutting the budget, we're cutting travel, and people go, you're not lean enough. There's still waste out there somewhere that we have to find. And at some point, there isn't any waste, you know. But that's the mythological boogeyman that's out there, that there's all this government waste, you need to cut. And that's a slippery slope that goes nowhere. I mean, if we want to show them what will happen if we don't raise rates, okay, let's do that and show them what the consequences of that are. But when you haven't raised rates in 23 years, you haven't adjusted for inflation, and you're still seeing some increase in cost, it's fiscally irresponsible not to cover what the cost of the service is. That's what I see. Now, I like looking at leaning up if we can, just like anybody else, when I do with my budget. But we just can't keep saying, well, we're too top-heavy, we got too much to spend. That's always going to be the case. And reverse, I will tell you that you give government more money, they'll always find a way to spend it.
Right.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You give me more money, I'll find a way to spend it. But yeah, you could run lean, but I think that after 23 years, right, we're stuck at half of what the actual value of that money is today. Where are we going to go? When does that stop?
And that's a good discussion to have. But one of the other things that we have to account for is that those rents that haven't been raised within 25 years is about 18% of our budget. It covers about 12% of our cost, our costs. In the ensuing 25 years, we've got 50 cents that's charged every month on cell phones. They weren't around when these rates were started. So that is an influx of new revenue. About 5 years ago, we got another influx of new revenues in the prepaid cell phone market.
So, Rick, those same conditions apply to all the other districts. There's no difference. We're not special.
And I think that's irrelevant. I think it's irrelevant, yeah, because the fact is, you're going into the red. I don't care about these new resources because we're still going into the red. And I don't know if cutting out these lunches, although we certainly can do that, okay. I'm a vegetarian, but that's only going to be a drop in the budget. You know, it just reminds me of the federal government when people say, we need to get rid of foreign aid. That's 0.5% of the budget. It's not going to do anything. I mean, it's a tough decision, and it's got political consequences for people like me and the mayor's council. But if you're not willing to make the decision, then don't run for office. Which I don't think I'm going to run next time.
Right then,
yeah, again.
Well, I think, you know, for us, political will is needed to raise rates. Bureaucrats can say all we want,
right,
but we got to make a business case for it. Is it logical? We are clearly, as a business, leaving money off the table by not at least being connected with our peers, because we're trapped in 1987.
So what is the function of bureaucrats?
Facilitate operations of government. And
well, you're the experts.
Right.
You know, a lot of us who get elected to office, we're not the experts. And you just get elected, you don't know what's going on. You just have some sort of idea. You got mad and you want to run for office.
Right.
We rely on you to give us the information.
Agreed. And that's
a balanced approach of information. A balanced approach.
Agreed. And I think that's the point we're trying to get to. We're trying to get those points across to those who can make the decision. And I think we haven't done a very good job, because we've sort of been in this, we're just keeping the lights on, we're okay, out of sight, out of mind. Now we're to the point where we're going through a paradigm shift to the next generation 911, all these other services. This body has somehow served other purposes that the people, the communities we serve want us to do. And now the red's starting to materialize, and we've got to make a logical next step decision. And we clearly have best you know, if we were keeping pace with everybody else for the last 25, 30 years, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now.
Well, the red is materialized because we are considering changing funding, our funding mechanism for the assistance funds. It was set up that we would fund those from our previous year surpluses. So if we don't have a previous year surpluses, which is
so I'll just tell you this, the entities that were currently receiving this money would not be happy if the money went away.
But that is why they have to be involved in this.
That's right.
And I have to be able to say the board has asked for a balanced budget to be presented or a 2% budget reduction to be presented so we can say, all right, this is what staff in the office are doing. This is where opportunities, and this is what our recommendation back to our mayors are.
That's right.
And I think, I agree with what you're saying, but if I just go back to Mr. Cook and Mayor Price and say, we're just gonna drive up, but we haven't done a deep dive into what type of budget impacts, they're gonna send me back with a, you haven't done enough. I agree with you on that. But if I go to them and say, all right, here's where we're at. What direction do you have for me as your appointee to this board? I think you at least give me, they're gonna ask me for our recommendations, Doug and I think that we'll be able to present some good options and make the arguments that you're asking us to make on behalf of your staff here. But they have to see what the impact, and I need to be able to say to them, it's gonna cost me X amount of money because I'm gonna need staff to do map roll. I'm gonna need staff to do this. I'm gonna need staff to do that, which we're. So I don't know how we wanna do it. I don't know if it's a percentage. I don't know if it's just, you know, a balance, but I don't know. But those are my comments.
My concern is that once you get rid of the grants, then you're losing the opportunity to encourage cities to upgrade their facilities and their equipment, because a lot of us won't have money. And if we know there's grant money out there, then we will do our best to match it or whatever we need to do and upgrade. Otherwise, you're gonna have a lot of smaller communities not upgrading.
Right.
So do you have to go after the 50 cents? See, I think that's something you have to set. Just because everybody's charging 50, is that the number, right? So if you come at it from a different number, 30, 40, 45, whatever, right? At least you're looking at trying to be responsible with the dollars coming in.
Well,
not just trying to match the community, I guess.
I don't know what the rate would be. I mean, it would depend on what the numbers were telling us that were necessary.
Yeah.
I don't think we randomly just say 50 cents sounds good. I think you look at what the actual cost of providing the service is.
I would also make the argument, brought it up last time we were here, I'll bring it up again. I do believe that consolidation of ESAPs in the county is in the best interest of this office, of this board, of our communities, and I do believe that we can find some cost savings in our budget here by reducing the number of touch points we have on 40 different ESAPs throughout the county. But that would be a whole different project to say, all right, show me, find it. Because I'm very comfortable that it's there. It may not be enough to cover a budget gap, but I do believe.
Yeah, because the call volume is not going to change. If you consolidate, that means whatever consolidated location you have, still going to have the same amount of people. There'd just be one building versus five or six. And for a lot of our smaller PSAPs, that dispatcher is also a works part of the jail system. They do admin work for the police department, or the fire department. So even though you take 911 calls physically from that building, you're not saving them money in the personnel because they're going to still need somebody sitting in that chair. Only thing to change is their calls are now going to be answered somewhere else.
That's probably one example, but I think there are clearly other examples where consolidation is clearly there's no doubt about
consolidation
it.
Consolidation definitely can save the jurisdiction money. My point is, does it save the district money for what we do? That's my point. Even if we reduce by three or four seats, you're talking $900 a month. that's...
Yeah, part of our goal is we serve the district, and I think sort of the district's interest by the way we do business also helps the city's bottom line too. You know, there's a collective effort here, not just, you know, we've got to think more as that we're part of a system, not just a single entity that drives our own issues. Where everything we do touches others, and, you know, I think we need to be part of a positive effort across the board, across the community. Can we, can we survive next year with the current budgetary situation? And because the problem is time's against us. We can't raise rates today. We can't facilitate anything. Can we make 2021 budget with the driving agenda for 21 is consolidation and complete analysis on the rate issue? Because to Rick's point, we could cut this place to the bone. We could cut out all the things that have a negative impact on all the certain cities we serve, because their budgets are going to go up, or they're not going to provide the things they provide. And all these things have to be looked at, you know, from every possible angle. But there are some fundamentals we agree. I think we agree. One, we all think consolidation is a smart thing to a certain extent. Maybe not all the way, but some aspect of it. Two, I don't think there is appropriate recognition by all that how much we serve these communities through the PSAP funding and through the radio assistance programs. Those are providing next generation services and efforts. Their support efforts just on the next generation effort. I think this thing is sort of starting to sputter because we're not built for a next generation reality, because we're still trapped in a 1987 funding mechanism. But it doesn't, you know, we need to do it smartly, not you know, just opportunistically. We need to do it smartly. And could this organization run more efficiently? Sure, but to the mayor's point, what you know, it's not going to be enough of an impact to balance your budget if we cut out the employee appreciation thing, and we don't do box lunches, and you know, this board historically has been. And we even look at employee benefits, how we do employee benefits. I don't hear the board saying, let's cut the 105% funding of our retirement system and things like that. I think we should strategically start looking at the consolidation in an earnest manner and from a funding perspective, that we go after that issue aggressively. And we have to do it through our political pathway, because we're not authorized to raise the rates unilaterally without consulting our communities that we represent. So the question is, 2021. I look at the numbers, it looks to me like it's a survivable year. But if not, someone doesn't think we are survivable, do we have a suggestion otherwise? Rick.
If we show a red number in the next 2 years, the Commissioner's Court will not approve the budget.
Sure, and I think that's where we've got to take this too. We've got to go to the Commissioner's Court as one of the other entities, but I think that's the point. So how do you stop from being in red? How do you stop that?
Balance budget.
Right, and how do you can balance a budget many different ways, right?
Which gets back to give me a balanced budget, give me a wish list of the things that...
So, when you say the Commissioner's Court will not approve it, Tarrant County has two votes on this board, right?
No, it's four. The Commissioner's Court is four county commissioners and the county judge.
So the votes that occur on this board are inconsequential when it comes to funding. Is it the point?
Your budget does need to be approved by several entities, including the commissioners.
Correct. So if any other entity didn't approve this budget, then would it pass? I'm just asking a question. I don't know.
Not according to the statute.
So will we be in the red for the following fiscal year?
For the following fiscal year, we would be able to dip into our reserves and we would not be in the red.
So Wayne, to your point, any entity that has a voting representative to this board could stop the budget by voting no, is what you're saying?
Correct. The statute requires Tarrant County and Fort Worth and other entities have to approve the budget.
And what does approve mean? Does it mean majority or does it mean unanimous approval?
By each entity, the total of the entities. I've always interpreted it as unanimous approval, yes.
Okay.
And we do have a history of that happening the year that the cities didn't give raises. And we did present a budget that proposed a 3% raise to staff because we could fund it and not raise our rates. And Commissioner's Court voted it down. So we had to come back with a budget that did not have the raises in it.
So, Wayne, are you saying every city has to vote for it?
Not every city, but there are certain entities that do have to approve it.
Which are?
Yes. Tarrant County, Fort Worth, Arlington, Irving,
Grand Prairie.
Grand Prairie. Grand Prairie.
And Mayor's Council.
And Mayor's Council.
So does the new budget have any allowances for pay increase in here?
Yes.
Because I can tell you now that I speak for Grand Prairie, we're not getting cost of living increases this year, and I don't know about some of the other cities.
Arlington's not either.
We're not receiving any kind of cost of living or lump sum or any type of compensation. So our city as a whole has cut 1% out of our budget moving forward for next fiscal year. So
clearly we could make 2021 a survivable year. And part of that buffer would also be that we probably would not authorize employee raises to be consistent with the rest of the cities that we serve. But to Rick's point, I mean, we're approaching a problem that we've got to address sooner or later, which is if we're forecasting future economic problems here in the district, how do we address those problems? Do we cut all the services to a baseline? And to my point, when we talk like that, we shouldn't be talking about texting 911. We should be just making it all go away to the bare minimum. And I don't think that's the interest of this board or the community. Those things generate cost. And I think the PSAP and I think the radio assistance fund programs drive improvements in the district, cities and the services we provide, the PSAPs, and the radio system that is the conclusion of the 911 call. But also, to Rick's point, we should go, look at our budget year after year and make sure we're making the most cost-effective decisions we can. And I think we're approaching that red point eventually to where that decision-making is going to have to occur sooner than later. I think we collectively want to be proactive in how we deal with this budget.
So this next year's budget too, did I read correctly in here that would account for 3 new positions as well in the district?
No, it's not. That was the Gardner's suggestion. Okay. It's not included in our actual budget.
Okay, so I think you hear where we're at. Is everyone in concurrence that we just move forward with the 2021 budget and we'll make appropriate decisions regarding employee pay and other things like that to make sure we stay in the black this year? And then we address the issue of consolidation and rate cost fees this year as our 2 primary objectives for fiscal 21.
I'm good with that.
Anybody else?
And if we're going to, look at the radio interoperability, I'd like some input from staff on what they see going down the road, because right now it's all based on P25. And that standard was set at the same time that we set our 20 cent rates. And with FirstNet coming on, we got a whole lot of new things coming in. That money may be better spent trying to help some of our member communities get to those newer technologies instead of paying operational expenses.
I agree.
No, we can certainly tweak. We can do a lot of tweaking. I agree with you. You're right.
So did you need me? Does anybody want me to do research on what options we have as far as rates go? We had a discussion on the VoIP rates and whether or not we had any ability to either adopt different residential business rates for the VoIP versus...
I think we should, or we're just going to keep having the same conversation, board meeting after board
meeting. And we're going to be asked by our...
Right. We need to have something to present with all the other data we already have to our mayor's stakeholders.
Wayne, the legislation is in, every year that the board signs for VoIP, the legislation is in that paragraph. And you can just look at the, and it takes you right to the link.
Okay, with you on that.
Well, that'd be a nice little solution if all of a sudden 20 cent lines could become 46 cent lines, because we missed the technicality, but I don't.
You know, that is, that is one of the other thing I can report is that I have gotten some internal support for moving the business rates as long as we don't touch grandma. So the 20 stays.
So when you say when grandma has a VoIP line?
No, grandma has a landline.
Okay, so what you mean? You mean the copper line?
She was on Texas First for $10 a month. I think that's what that would be.
Okay. Any other discussion on the budget? Director, do you have anything you want to share? Okay. So, any other items for consideration for the board? We have an executive session today. Okay. And anyone here from the public comment? Okay. So with that, I guess we stand adjourned. Thank you.